When you compare the story of Bartimaeus with the stories that come before it in the Gospel of Mark, the first thing that might stand out as you were looking at these stories is that in this story, nothing goes wrong. Nobody is confused about Jesus' identity. The disciples don't get in the way of Jesus' work. There isn't anyone who's trying to stop Jesus or trick him or arrest him. It's very strange. It's unusual for the Gospel of Mark. Think about it. The gospel stories we've had for the last several weeks have been chock full of people challenging Jesus about his work. He gets back talk from the disciples and even worse from the Jewish leaders. And so this story is a little odd because nothing seems to go wrong. It's also a transitional point in Jesus' story. With the telling of this story, Mark ends his narrative of Jesus' ministry in Galilee and begins the very direct route to going to Jerusalem and to the cross. We don't often hear the story of Bartimaeus as a part of worship because most of the time it comes on the last Sunday in October, and as Lutherans, we tend to celebrate Reformation Day that day, and so we don't read about Bartimaeus. But we decided this year we'd mix things up and we would read his story today. And I was kind of excited to have something a little less familiar to preach on until sometime on Wednesday when a friend posted this. Yes, I know you meant it metaphorically, but it's not very nice to be regarded as a metaphor for sin or unbelief. John Hall. I'm going to read it again. Yes, I know you meant it metaphorically, but it's not very nice to be regarded as a metaphor for sin and unbelief. I had never heard of John Hall before, but I found myself wanting to know who this person was and why he had these strong things to say in response to Jesus. His words stuck with me for quite a while, and so I finally, God love Google, I looked him up. And I learned that John Hall was a professor of religious education and practical theology at the University of Birmingham in England. When he was 13, he developed cataracts, and by the early 1960s, he was a young doctoral student, and he was starting to have problems with retinal detachment. He was having to have surgery after surgery on his eyes. And by the time he was probably 25 or so, he could still read with the aid of magnifiers, but when he would walk to work, he would follow the yellow lines down the middle of the road so he wouldn't get lost or harmed. Can you imagine just getting there by following those yellow lines? He had issues with retinal detachment, and despite these surgeries, his vision began to continue to deteriorate. And by the time he was 45, he had lost all of his vision and could no longer perceive any light at all. Total darkness. It was then that Hall realized that he was no longer just a visitor to the condition of blindness. He said, "I had taken up residence in another world." His book, Touching the Rock, which comes from his diaries that were written during those years, is thought to be one of the most compelling books to reflect on the process of becoming blind and the experiencing of not having your sight. In a 2013 interview that was written when he was in his 70s, Hall said, "In the English language, and I believe in most languages, the word blindness is used as a negative metaphor, suggesting insensitivity, ignorance, clumsiness, and lack of discrimination. This negative language is also found in the Bible, and it has come into our hymn books and our daily speech. It is nearly impossible to write a sermon about a guy who went blind and to not use words that have to do with seeing, that you're not talking about sight at all. For the rest of the day, try not to use seeing as a metaphor. It's nearly impossible. That's how we perceive the world." He said that he didn't think the church was any better or worse than most of society, but there are things that congregations can do to make worship and participation easier for blind people. But here's the part that has stuck with me this week. He said, "I read the stories about Christ healing the blind with annoyance. Blindness is associated with sin, unbelief, and darkness. When your blindness is removed, you become a follower of Jesus. The healing miracles are bad examples of how the church should treat blind people today. After all, there were no blind people among the disciples of Jesus. It is so tempting to think of Bartimaeus' story as being one about healing. In my head, the way it's the titled, it's the story of blind Bartimaeus. I mean, blind, it just goes like it's his first name. He was blind, and thanks to Jesus, he can see. So, ta-da! His faith made him well. But I think John Hall's words are meant to drive us to go deeper in our exploration of this story. He said again, yes, I know you meant it metaphorically, but it's not very nice to be regarded as a metaphor for sin or unbelief. But if Bartimaeus' story isn't about a man who was blind, who can now see, if it isn't a healing story, then what is it? In the final verse of the reading, Jesus names faith as what drives Bartimaeus. And the rest of the story, what comes before and what comes after, shows us what that faith is like, shows us what it is to be a faithful person. Matt Skinner wrote, Bartimaeus's faith is not about reciting the correct confession or subscribing to certain dogmas. It is his unrelenting conviction that Jesus can and will do something. The evidence can be seen in Bartimaeus before and after his encounter with Jesus. The first thing about him is that he gets who Jesus is. In the 9.5 chapters that lead up to this story, not one other person has been able to understand so much about Jesus with such finite amounts of data. Bartimaeus calls Jesus Son of David, and no one else in all of Mark's gospel uses that name to refer to Jesus. He sees Jesus as being God's designated messenger. Jesus is the one, the Holy One, the Mighty One, the Royal One, who has been chosen to lead his people, just as David was chosen to lead them. The title also introduces the idea that Jesus is a royal figure. So blind or not, Bartimaeus understands those royal dimensions of Jesus' identity, and that identity will be a central part of the story from this time forward, because very quickly we're going to get to Jerusalem and Jesus coming in on Palm Sunday and being acclaimed like a king as he enters town, and then when he is crucified, he will be called again the King of the Jews. The second thing about Bartimaeus is that he persists, no matter what. In Mark's telling of the gospel, faith doesn't come easily to people, and there are quite often tremendous barriers and obstacles to interacting with Jesus. Like earlier in Mark, they have that story about having to take off the roof of the house in order to lower the man down, and his friends lower him from the roof into the house so he can see Jesus. And there's this Syrophoenician woman who has this whole debate with Jesus about whether or not he should cure her daughter, and they have this conversation in which he basically calls her a dog and her daughter a puppy, which was not a nice thing to do. And of course, the disciples get in the way more often than not. They sort of act like Jesus' security team or his personal handlers. And so they're always saying, well, Jesus, there was this person who wanted to see you, but we told them to go away. Bartimaeus gets shushed because he's in danger of making a scene. But when the people tell him to quiet down, he just gets louder. He is determined to meet Jesus. And so even though people are actively trying to keep him away from this rabbi, he keeps at it. And that's because he expects that when he meets Jesus, something is going to happen. In some way, he will be transformed. He expects and anticipates that Jesus is going to do something. And so he demands mercy. People who came to Jesus often wanted things. The rich young man wanted eternal life. The disciples wanted power and glory. But this guy, blind and parked on the roadside, begging for whatever he could get, all he asks for is mercy. And he doesn't even specify what kind of mercy, but he knows that Jesus can do something. Jesus tells the crowds to go and get Bartimaeus and call him over, and which they do. And Bartimaeus does something very strange for a blind beggar. He gets up and he tosses aside his cloak. This is clear evidence that he believes that Jesus is going to change his life. Otherwise, why would he give up one of his very few and precious belongings? He expects that his life will change, and from here on out, he won't have to sit on that cloak waiting for people to come by and begging them for pennies. Things are going to be different. And here's the fourth thing about Bartimaeus. He is ready to interact with Jesus. So when Jesus asks him, "What do you want me to do for you?" he doesn't have to like think about it and say, "Well, you know, what is it that I really want from you, God?" He comes out with it right off, and he asks for his sight to be returned. And with no fuss at all, no spit, no mud, which we've seen in previous healing stories, there's no washing in special waters or anything else, Jesus restores his sight. And then comes the tricky part, the part that John Hall disliked. "Your faith has made you well," Jesus says. Or more literally, "Your faith has saved you." Hall didn't see his blindness as a sign of brokenness that needed fixing, or as something from which he needed to be saved. He said, "My works are, in a way, a yearning to overcome the abyss which divides blind people from sighted people. In seeking to overcome that abyss, I've emphasized the uniqueness of the blind condition. Blindness is a world. I've also sought to show that it's one of a number of human worlds, that sight is also a world, and that to gain our full humanity, blind people and sighted people need each other." He also said, "Becoming blind has given me a sense of solidarity with other marginalized minorities. I have become more conscious of human suffering. This has changed my theology profoundly, since I tend to start from pain rather than from historic revelation." Mark may have intended that this would be a story about a blind man who gets his sight back. After all, his community believed that disabilities were caused by sinfulness, either of the person who had the disability or of their parents or grandparents. Someone along the family tree had done something to cause this to happen. But given what we know about blindness and about sight, and how those things can marginalize other people, I think it's important for us to see this as being more than just a healing story. So here's the fifth good thing about Bartimaeus. He is not the first person who approaches Jesus in faith and asks for mercy, but he is the only one who ends up following Jesus and going with him. After 10 chapters of so much secrecy and confusion and misapprehension, and the disciples going, "What did you say, Jesus? We know you told us something, but we forgot what it is." I mean, it's this constant struggle for the disciples to understand and remember that Jesus is going to go to Jerusalem and die on the cross and rise again. From one day to the next, it seems like they have very little grip on the story. But Bartimaeus shows Mark's readers that faith in Jesus remains possible. There are so many people who get it wrong in Mark's telling of the story, and even the ending falls short, because when you get to the end of Mark, it says that the women witness what has happened, and then they run away in fear, and they don't tell anybody anything. Bartimaeus and John Hall are both examples of what it is to believe and to believe fiercely, to neither one of them let the circumstances of their life stifle or extinguish their faith. To describe the gospel story as the healing of blind Bartimaeus is to miss the best part of what happens in this story. To describe John Hall in terms of his blindness is to miss his story altogether. He once said, "Remember, just remember, blindness is only my hobby. It's not my work." His words can help us to see Bartimaeus more fully and with more depth. His story is incredible, not because he gets his sight back. It's incredible and unbelievably so, because despite everything that has happened to him, Bartimaeus believes in the power of God. With very little experience of who Jesus is or what Jesus can do, he believes that Jesus can change his life. And he acts based on that belief. And he trusts based upon that faith. And his faith, his relationship with Jesus, changes his life. And so even though Jesus sends him on his way, he chooses to follow the teacher, to take his way, to go with him all the way to Jerusalem. That's what happens to Bartimaeus. But what happens to us when we are challenged, when God says, "What can I do for you?" Do we have an answer? Is there something we are needing out of our relationship with God that we've been too shy to ask for? I had a friend who was a missionary for many years, and she believed in specific prayer, very specific prayer. And they needed a new truck to take to Tanzania where her son was working, and so they needed this truck, and they only had like $6,000. And so that morning, before they went out looking for the truck, Rainey and her son sat, and they prayed, "Dear God, we need to get a truck. We need it to be at least this big. We need it to be in good shape, and this is how much money we can spend. Please, God, we need you to help us so we can find a truck for less than $6,000 that we can transport to Africa." Sure enough, God answered their prayer. Very specifically, I think it was like $5,800 they had money left over. And one could say, well, they would have had that happen regardless. But they believed that God had a hand in helping them in what they were doing. They had faith that God was with them, even in the most mundane of activities like buying a pickup truck. We can follow in that image of faithful people who have been brave enough to ask God for what they need, to say, "This is what is missing. This is what I'm asking for, God." And God always answers, but sometimes God says yes, sometimes God says no, sometimes God says not yet, and sometimes God says wait and see. The answer to our prayers isn't always an immediate cure, an immediate fix. But whatever happens, we know that Jesus is with us and that we have chosen to follow him on the way. And together with him, our lives take on meaning and depth that they might never have. On Saturday, Katie and I were driving around in the car, and I had an idea, and I said, "Send me a text that says your faith has made you well." So she did. And then I tried to figure out later that day what it meant. Jesus says to Bartimaeus, "Go, your faith has made you well," or "Your faith has cured this thing. Your faith has made you whole." Your faith, our faith, can do the same, not in necessarily in that it heals what's broken, but that it makes us well, that we are able to live with the circumstances of our life and face it with bravery and joy because God is with us. Our faith makes us well. I've been trying to figure out a really brilliant thing, a brilliant way to find out why it is that people come to church and what it is that they do with that knowledge. I asked my daughter, "Why do you go to church?" And she just looked at me like I was stupid. But I want you to think about it. What is it that brings you here? What is it that happens in this place that keeps you coming back? If it's just that it's a hobby, or it's just that it's a place where you go to meet your friends, or you like the pretty music, and that's all there's more here waiting for you. Because this is a place we can come, and our faith will make us well. Our faith will lift us up. Our God is present in this place. Why do I come here? Because this is my holy place. This is the place that makes me well.